Tell us just like how you even got started in music.
Honestly, like in my family, my grandmother plays the organ, my grandfather plays jazz guitar, everybody sings, the whole family sings. So in my family, you were kind of weird if you didn't sing. So it was kind of just one of those things I don't remember ever learning. It was just something that I remember always getting thrown a mic from being a little girl in church. I'm really a church kid. I always say, like, I'm more of a church kid than I consider myself a vocalist. I grew up in church, and I grew up in a family where you didn't really have a choice. You got tossed the mic and make it work. And my first solo was Kurt Carr. I grew up on, like, really cool gospel music, and those were my introductions to a lot of worship stuff. And yeah, my family comes from the UPC Pentecostal background. And so it really is like everybody sings. And so that's how I started. And I loved church from a little girl. I loved the local church. I found it to be a very safe place for me, and also the place where I fell in love with music. And so I never really loved singing outside of church. I just really loved leading worship in church. It was where I felt most comfortable. Yeah. And so that was my start. Just honestly, singing in church, singing with my family. My dad's a gospel singer, so traveling, watching him sing. It's just really all I've ever known.
Isn't that great? It's so interesting. It seems like a lot of musicians and artists were PKs.
Yeah.
Like they grew up in the church. They grew up around music. They probably were thrown a guitar at some point or a solo, you know, sing for the offering.
I think because when you're a PK, you kind of like are the hired praise and worship leader, but not paid. You just do it.
Totally. It's just a very natural thing. Like there's little to no stage fright because you're up there a lot.
That was what was kind of funny. Like even when we tried to like start recording music is, we kept trying to put me in a studio and it was not working.
Yeah.
There was this disconnect every time I would go into a studio. And so even with like the last bit of music that we recorded, we were like, I need people in a room. Like, cause that is just what I'm used to and how I grew up, and where most people would be like polar opposite. They're like, please don't put me in a room in front of people. That's just like most comfortable to me. And it is probably a pastor's kid thing. Cause you really kind of become like a jack of all trades. I feel like I've done everything that you can possibly think of in church just to fill in the gaps.
It's amazing your family's still in ministry, and then you are as well. There was an era when it seemed like PKs were just like dropping like flies and they weren't sticking with the church. And I feel like it's shifting for some reason. I don't know why. It just seems like a lot of the PKs I talk to now are actually like all in. Like there's not like this, you know, cynicism towards the church. It's like they're like full in on ministry.
I feel like a lot of people have had a lot to say about my generation specifically. I'm like right on the edge. I think I'm the oldest of Gen Z, but I'm like just quite didn't make the cut for millennial. You know, I just think we've gotten a bad rep of like not wanting a move of God or church or Holy Spirit, like all those things. If I think about the conversations that I've had with my friends and stuff like that, I think that there is this sense of we do want it, but we really want something real. And I think that is the disconnect. I think it's like, no, we do want a move of God. We do want to see churches full, but we want something that's real. And we can't do the fake anymore. Like we can't do the hosting people and not hosting his presence. Like I think that there really is a group of people, and I think that they're close to my age, that we're just in that season where I feel like I want to see what my grandparents saw in church.
Yeah.
Or like, why did the people in the old revival see like these miracles happen? Like people like raised from the dead, like all these crazy miracles. And I feel like I'm certainly at a point where I'm like, okay, what is our generation doing that's making us not see as many miracles? Like, I think we just really want something real. We don't want to just go to church for, you know, worship and 3 points. We want like a real move of God. We want to experience what our grandparents saw. And so I think that that's been like a conversation that we've talked a lot about just amongst my friends and different worship leaders and things like that. And so I think it's like trying to get back to that.
I love that. And I really hope that does happen. And I think it is. I think it is happening. I think about what Gen Z is bringing to the church and music. I feel like it's so fun. It feels more lighthearted. It feels more free. It feels more just like happy, I guess. Which like the joy of the Lord, you know what I mean? Like there was this whole like generation in this era of worship leaders who was like, they were all about lament. Like everything was just lament.
Sure. Yeah.
And there is a place for lament, but it felt like too much lament. And there's something about the Gen Z, like I'm just thinking about like the music that's coming out, like Forrest Frank type stuff, or it's just happier, more of like a fun play on what it means to be a Christian. And I think that's awesome. I think we need more of that. How would you say like Gen Z is changing the church and worship? Like, are you seeing anything interesting?
I totally agree. And I think that we are like trying to show it in a practical way. Like I think Forrest Frank is such a great example. Even like, I don't know if you've seen all the stuff where he like broke his back, but like miraculously, like God just healed him. Like all these things, but he's, I feel like he shows it in a way that is not scary. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like this joyful thing that you're talking about and this very normal thing where somebody who's not a Christian, I feel like, could see his page and be like, oh, this is cool. Wow. Is this real? Like, but it's not this scary, heavy thing.
Heavy.
It's like God does miracles and let's celebrate about it. And let's also normalize it. Let's not make it this rare thing. Let's make it this thing where it's like, hey, God's doing miracles every single day and let's celebrate it. Like, I do think that someone like a Forrest Frank, Elevation Rhythm, I think that they are not losing the spirit and the reverence of God, but they are making it tangible for people who don't know God. And I think for the person who walks in the church for the first time, they can look on that stage and be like, oh, they don't look that different than me. But there's something that's on their life that is different. Yeah. And I'm drawn to that. And I do think that we've been trying to do that. I always say, like, I feel like my dad's era of church was really good at hosting people. Like, I feel like his era, like, the churches, like, blew up. And people were just coming and coming. And I think my grandfather's generation was a great host of the presence. Yeah. And I'm in this place now where I'm like, how do we host the presence of the Lord really well, but also treat people really well? How do we do both of those things really well? And I feel like that's something that I'm like constantly thinking about, even at like our local churches that I serve at, is like, because I do think that people want to see this really crazy move of God. But I also think that in the past, maybe we haven't treated people as well, or we've made church a little scary in order to reverence God. And I feel like there's a way to do both, to reverence the Holy Spirit, host him really well, and also to like host people really well.
It's almost like millennials tried to like perfect everything and make everything like really nice and clean and perfect.
Yeah.
To please like people, I guess. I guess to make people feel like they want to be there. And then Gen Z are like, okay, let's not, it doesn't need to be like clean. It just needs to be real and light, not heavy. Like, I like what you said. Like, it's not scary. It's like, hey, no, this is actually a cool thing. This is like fun. This is a joyful thing to be a part of. I love that. I was thinking about, there's a church that is run by like Gen Zs, basically. I was noticing like on their, in their church, they don't do any sort of like stage lighting. Like literally the whole room is just full lights on, like fluorescent lights in the ceiling. It's just like, and there's no stage lighting. This church is like blowing up. And it's, so it's like, doesn't look, you know, what we would have said like was like the show like looked cool and professional.
Yeah.
It doesn't, it's not that way at all. It's just full lights on, everybody together, and feels very real. And to me, it reminds me of when I was, you know, a kid in the early 90s with my parents' church, The Vineyard. And it was very much like that. We were not being cool at all. Like, we were just set up in like a school gym, full lights on, but people worshiping their faces off. There was just a realness, like a sweetness to it. That was just, it just felt real. It's just like, hey, we're just being together. We're not, there's not a show. There's no like pretension here.
Totally. Yeah. It reminds me of like my youth group days. I mean, I think we had youth group in a storage shed, and it was like acoustic guitar and a cajon and three singers that probably couldn't sing at all, but it was like, those are the moments that I really remember being like wrecked by the presence of God for the first time in my life, because none of all the other things that we worry about were even on my radar. Like, we were just there to sing songs. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. I mean, obviously now I feel like we have so many tools to use to like bring people. And I love meeting the people that are big creatives, because it's like, how creative can we be? How much can we do? And I feel like God gave us those gifts. Like, let's go crazy with it. Like, there's some, there's so much that we can do that can draw people in. But there is that thing where there was just a simplicity to when I was younger that I do really remember experiencing the presence of the Lord in those small rooms, like with 20 youth just singing He Loves Us for 30 minutes because it's all we knew, you know?
So as a songwriter, have you noticed like over the past like, you know, decade or so, are songs changing? Like the how songs are written or the content of the songs?
I think so. I actually think one thing I've found cool is that a lot of our songs, I feel like, are getting back to vertical. And I think for a while we did do a lot of storytelling, testimonial songs, songs of lament, which I'll be the first to say some of those are my favorites, because I am like a testimony girl. Like, first thing I yell, I feel like, when I'm worshiping is, I remember. Like, I love songs like that. But I have noticed lately when I'm choosing songs, there are a lot of things about singing about what the angels are singing and calling Him holy and, you know, singing about His worthiness and what it will be like when we get to heaven. I think I keep finding songs like that. Who else is worthy? Holy forever. No one like the Lord. Like, there's all these really big songs that are just very reverent and vertical. Like, there's no one like you. You're holy. We want to sing what the heavens sing. And I do think there's something to that. I feel like songwriters are finding that those songs, even as a worship leader, I think we can have a set of songs. And once I start singing that He's holy, the room shifts, like something breaks in the room every single time. And so I do think that there is something specifically for worship songs about when you start just singing about the holiness of God, something it changes in the atmosphere.
I totally agree. I was on staff at a church where we had like a 1 through 5 system where like, they were like, the first song was like, you know, it's like the opener. It's like the gathering song. And then as you go down this journey, so then you get to like the 3, and that's like a testimonial song. Now that we're together, let's talk about what the Lord has done for us. And then you get to 5 at the end, the destination, the main goal of the worship set is to get people to this point of just vertical, where there's no I's or me's or we's in the song, that it's only like you. Yeah. Because that's when it happens. That's like, and that's every the destination. You know, and that's also the eternal destination too. Like, that's where we're going to be in heaven. I do love that there's more vertical songs being written.
I really think so. We keep having these writing camps, and it's so funny because we've now got, with our team out here in California, I think we have 3 songs that have the title Revelation in it. And I'm like, we got to figure out a new title, but we just keep talking about like the heavens and what the angels are singing and His holiness. And I'm like, there's something on that right now. Like, they're just
there is. End times? I don't know. Like, does that mean it's the end of the world coming soon? Hey, we're one day closer than we were yesterday. That's all we know. You know, as we're talking about Gen Z, the millennials, all the people, I guess what I'm wondering is, like, how do we include boomers all the way through Gen Zers in our worship at church?
I feel like you have to meet them where they are. It goes back to that realness piece that I keep saying. I always tell worship leaders that the first thing you can do to try to compel people to worship is ask them to join in. But the second thing, if that doesn't work, is I feel like you can compel them to worship by inspiring them with how much you love the Lord. And so I do think there is a moment as a worship leader where you kind of make the decision, okay, if I'm not necessarily getting them to come with me, I have the choice right now to just actually be a worshiper and actually love on the Lord and do something that's really real in front of all these people. And hopefully the way that I love the Lord inspires people to love him that way.
Yeah,
but I right. think there is an art to going on stage and actually forgetting about the fact that you have all these people that you have to lead to this place. There's actually something cool about just being a worshiper and yeah. inspiring them from that place. And I think that that's, it goes back to that real piece. It's something about just being real with people and having like a real authentic relationship with the Lord. I remember being younger, seeing Stephanie Gretzinger break down and just sob and worship. And she wasn't necessarily leading me in that moment, but she inspired me in that moment of like, oh, yeah. wow, I want to worship the Lord like that. And so I do think that there is something, and she's another one that's just so real. Like, she's so real, so raw. And I think that that's why people love her and are drawn in when she begins to worship. And so I think that there is something to like meeting people where they are, but also like it has to be real. I feel like it has to be real. It can't just be singing songs. It has to be this real thing of like, I love the Lord. Yeah. Like what it really is about that I feel like we forget a lot.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. But do you think that being real covers the issue that a lot of churches face, which is, I think, like, yeah. how do you please everybody? How do you please the like Gen Zers in the room? And how do you please the boomers in the room where you've got yeah. these people who want to sing like Forrest Frank?
Yeah.
Goodbye Yesterday versus these people over here who are like, why are you not singing As the Deer or How Great Thou Art?
Right.
You know, like you think, and I don't know, I think this actually might be interesting is like, if it's just real across the board and it feels not just like performance, but it's actually congregational worship. Do you think that that bridges the divide between those two?
I do, but I also am like a huge advocate of if you have 30 minutes in your worship set, I do think it is possible to meet everyone if you are intentional. And I do think that a lot of worship leaders have kind of gotten stuck in the rut of choosing like your top three favorite songs and there's your set list. And I really fight that a lot because I do think about my grandmother who wants to hear a hymn. And I think mm-hmm. about my younger siblings that want to hear Elevation's like top song right now. My perspective is, why can't you do both? Like, yeah, why totally. Doesn't that work? Like, you know, you can do Holy Forever and then Worthy is the Lamb, Worthy is the Lamb. We do a song that's like Come and Move. And it's talking about just like, I'll say yes to you, Lord. And then on the back end, we do, I'll say yes, Lord, yes to your will and to your way. Like there yeah. is a way to really meet everyone. I just think it takes a lot of intentionality. And I think it also is about caring about everyone. Like,
yeah.
I don't necessarily love singing all of those songs, but I have seen that when I sing Holy Forever, it can hit, you know, the youth group. And then when I sing I Need Thee, Oh, I see the mother who's been in church her whole life. And she feels like, oh, wow, you just sang the song that I had my first encounter with the Lord. And I think that as worship leaders, we should care about that. Like,
yeah,
I really wow. do.
That's a really good point. You have to care. See, you yeah. you can't just be like, okay, I'm a Gen Zer, so I'm only going to care about the Gen Zers in the room. But you'd have to actually care about the 70, 80-year-old in the room. If you're preparing a meal for your child, you do everything you can to make a well-balanced meal, like a nutritious Absolutely. Meal that's well-balanced. You don't just give them all ice cream, or you don't give them only steak or only
right.
beans even. Because that is the loving thing to do, is to give them a well-nourished meal. And if we can't do that with 30 minutes, that probably is a problem about like our intentionality. Because I do think you're right, that if we have 30 minutes, I mean, that could be five songs.
And that's where that creative piece comes in my yeah. opinion, because it's like, you don't have to do the whole song. Give them right. a chorus. Like, give them a part of it. And it's not just an age group thing. I also think this is a cultural thing. We shouldn't just be doing CCM. We shouldn't just be doing Black gospel. Like, when I think about, like, Israel Houghton, like, those are the people that bridged gaps. Like, I do think there is an art to, like, even trying to stretch yourself culturally and generationally. Yeah. Like both things really matter. Now that is hard to do. But I think with intentionality, it really is something that if you, like we said, if you care about it, you can do it.
I think that actually might be the harder thing to do. I think it's harder to be like, okay, here's like a gospel song. Here's like CCM. Here's Caleb, I can only imagine for those people. You know, like I think that it actually almost requires like a really, really good musicianship to be able to pull that off.
That is probably true. That I would agree with is like musician wise, it can be super difficult to do. I do think like here at our church at Redemption, we're super blessed and we are like, you know, we just did like OU Praise, which is like elevation worship. And then we did For Every Mountain, which is like Kurt Carr. Polar opposites, but I love it. It like just makes me so happy because I see everyone in the room feel like, wow, like you just get everyone. And so I do agree. It musically more difficult for sure. But if you have it.
Yeah. Well, that's probably also then on the other side. Now we're talking about the people on stage, why it's probably also important to have representation there as well. Age groups, but also, like, you know, genre, you know, people who like crush at like gospel and people who are great at CCM. How do we get younger people involved? I have talked to a lot of churches, pastors who say they have a hard time finding worship leaders. Like it's almost like worship leaders are a revolving door. There was a time when I was a teenager, everybody wanted to be a worship leader. Everybody like, it was like a thing. Yeah. And it seems like there's kind of like not as much of a thing.
I have wondered why we don't have as many worship leaders as we used to. I do think that worship leaders sometimes can start the whole hopping around thing. Yeah. Right. I have a lot of grace for if you don't know any better. But I do think there is something, in my opinion, even as like being a Christian artist as well, the church has kept me so grounded. Like when everything else is a mess, I have a church home that I can go back to, pastors that cover me, and like a congregation that has seen me and knows me. That you can't, like, I feel like I could never take that for granted because that has become my safe place. But I do think that a lot of worship leaders, if you don't know the safety of that, I think that you can start getting into the habit of going from one to the other to the other. And never really planting. And I think that planting can be scary because you are trusting people to cover you and you are saying, hey, I'm going to like stick this out with you. But I think that if more people saw the safety that comes with it, they would be more drawn to it.
And the fruit. If you don't plant, you never see the fruit.
Yeah. Even here being at Redemption, like when I first started, I lost my job. And COVID, like, I didn't know what I was going to do. It's been 4 years. And now, like, I'm nominated for my first Dove, which, like, whatever. Yeah. It's not about accolades, but it's just, like, it's, like, wow, God really does bless, like, when you plant and you're consistent and you serve the church and you serve under pastors and you allow people to speak into your life. You allow people to correct you. Like, I have just learned that there is a blessing to that. And so I'm finally like on the side of it where I really am getting to see the blessings of it. And that's been really, really special. And I do think that if we talked about it more, I think it would draw more worship leaders to like, be like, okay, you know what? I want to lock in. I want to like really plant and do this, but I don't know if it's something that we necessarily talk about a lot. We also have a big like conference that we just did here at the church called Transfer. And it was about like bridging generations. And we did this podcast where we kind of talked with our pastor and us. And it ended up being this really beautiful moment where we were talking about discipleship. I think it just like, I don't know. I just had this moment where I have a great dad, but I have a lot of friends. A lot of them didn't have dads in their home. And so we were having this conversation with our pastor in front of everyone. And, we just started talking about how I think there is a generation that wants to be discipled and does want to be fathered, but we don't necessarily know how to because we didn't grow up with fathers in our homes. I think some older pastors have viewed as if kind of like, y'all don't want this. Y'all don't want authority figures. You don't want fathership. You don't want discipleship. But I think the truth is that we really just don't know how to respond to it in a healthy way because a lot of us haven't had it. And so there was like this really cool moment at our conference of reconciliation between two generations. And I think that that is going to help really, like, if what happened here at our church starts happening in other places, I really do believe that you will see more young people come to the Lord. Because I think that young people want to be fathered. They want to be mothered. They want discipleship. They want to be led. But I think that we haven't had enough healthy examples of it. And I think that there really does need to be a reconciliation between two generations.
It made me think of a memory of, I was on staff at a church called Willow Creek, and we did this conference. We were talking about multi-generational worship. Like, how do you get the younger generation to step in? And so one of the things we did, just as kind of like a visual, as a creative visual, we were playing How Great Is Our God, and the band was all adults. And as the song progressed, one by one, a kid, like a seventh grader, would walk out onto the stage with his guitar. And the older guy playing guitar would unplug his guitar, plug in the kid's guitar, and then the old guy would walk off stage and the kid would continue playing the song from where he left off. And then we did that for every instrument.
That's cool.
Guitar, we did it with bass and with drums. By the time you get to the bridge of name above all names, the whole front line was replaced by kids. The whole band was all sixth grade, seventh graders. And actually, we even have a clip of this. And I just think it was such a cool way to show, though, that like, we need to be passing the torch to like the younger generation. And we have to do it. Otherwise, there's going to be no one else. And I think it can be so easy for us to like hog the stage, you know, like once you like make it in a way. But I think it comes down to like these two things. This is the last thing I'll say, and then I would love to hear it, is that we're talking to two different sets of people here. Like, there's the people here who feel old. Like, I actually starting to feel that way. Like, I'm starting to feel like, okay, I'm like on the older side of worship leaders. Like, and I start having these thoughts of like, okay, is there a shelf life for worship leaders? And I think that's actually where the older people start like hanging on a little tighter. They're afraid of like the Gen Zers coming on and taking their place. But then there's like the other side of it. There's people who are feeling really young and they're feeling unheard, unnoticed, or like they're not given any sort of spot. How do we fix that? What do you think about that, Lizzie?
That's something I think about all the time because I'm 28. So I feel like I'm still on the younger side of it, but I am such a thinker that I'm always thinking about the day when I'm, you know, older and it will be my time to pass what God has given me. But I think when you were talking about that whole passing, like, that is what it is. We can't carry something that's not passed down to us. And it's like that, I think it's super hard for a generation to look at one generation and be frustrated with us because we don't have this thing, but you never passed it to us. And so I think that is the first thing. Like, there has to be this passing down of something. At the same time, I do think there also has to be an exchange of honor from the younger generation. And I don't know that we've done that well either. And so I think when you are on the older side of it, if there is this honor piece and your role just shifts. One thing I love here is that Pastor Ron at our church, his old worship leader, their name, their Pastor Stephen and Lori, they still live here. And so we get to call them when we don't know, like, what we're doing, feel stressed, or even like if we're having questions about how to do the relationship between pastor and worship leader, we have them to call. And I think that they've even said, like, because we've talked about this, they've said, we feel so fulfilled that God is using us in this role. Like, our role has shifted. They still lead worship, but it has changed, but they still have purpose. And I think that if we didn't honor them in that way, we would kind of hinder them being able to walk in their purpose. Because part of that right now is that they are pouring a well of knowledge into us weekly. And so I think I really do think it's those two things. I think it's like one generation being willing to pass something down and the other generation being willing to honor the gift that was before us. One thing I'll say about like our older worship leaders is when he leads, it doesn't feel like the older person's leading because he cares about being like relevant and cares about the songs that we're singing and he meets us where we are. And I think that because when you do that, I think like you choose how long you get to. Yeah. I don't believe in a shelf life. I believe that you choose if you want to be on a shelf life. I think like, that's up to you. Are you stuck in your ways or are you willing to also like sit with someone who's younger than you and y'all learn from each other? Like, I think that it starts at tables. And then I also think it can happen in worship settings.
And I think too, it does come down to like, do you care? Do you actually care about the older generation?
Yeah.
Do you actually care the other genres that are represented, you know, like genre, like styles and tastes of music that are represented in your congregation? Do you care? Because I think if you do, things will flow from that. Okay. Last thing.
Yeah.
And I hate to save it for last, but I mean, I guess it's the best for last. I'm excited about your debut album with the Central Provident releasing August 22nd. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
You've already released singles, Can't Help But Praise and Let the Alabaster Break. Tell us a little bit about these songs or the album, whatever you want to share.
It's so funny because I feel like so much of what we talked about is in this like record. The record has Because He Lives On It. It has I'll Say Yes, Lord, Yes. It has Alabaster Box on it, which is off the recent single, Alabaster Break and Alabaster Box. And I do. I feel this super heavy burden to bridge generations together. I really do feel like God is using me to do that and asking me to do that. And so even with what's happened with Let the Alabaster Break has been really special because I grew up on Alabaster Box, which is CC Winans' song. And it was the first song that I remember feeling the presence of the Lord, like hearing her sing that song. And so we put it on the back end of, you know, the single and just seeing people love both, love something new and love something that's nostalgic and old, older has been really, really special. And so this record means a lot to me. It's a live worship record. It's where I'm the most comfortable. It really is. Like when we went in there that night, I was like, let's just have a worship night. And if we get songs, we get songs. And we did, like we really did. And I'm really proud of it. And I hope that it's songs for the church, songs for worship leaders to sing, songs that really help like the topic that we're talking about. Like, you know, there's a lot of new songs on there that have hymns on the back of them. And so trying to help worship leaders find creative ways to do stuff like that.
That's awesome. Well, we're going to have all the tracks and all the chord charts up at Loop Community and CCLI Song Select. So excited about that. Excited for this album. And Lizzie, thanks for taking the time to have this conversation. It's been
nice to meet you. You too. Thank you for having me. I'm grateful for real.
All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. Let us know down in the comments how you incorporate multi-generational worship at your church.